Okay, everyone, good afternoon. Welcome to the Sunday keynote at Froscon. Please, everyone, get your seats and we can welcome Aleš Pohl to talk about the 30 years of our favorite desktop environment and what happened. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's not only the favorite, but also the one I've been making. So I am notably biased. First let me introduce myself a little bit. My name is Aleš, and I have been in KDE for around 20 years now. I am a software developer. I studied software at university. And I started doing my thing with KDE early on. And right now as well, I am the KDEV president. The KDEV is the organization around, well, KDE for things that are, well, that go beyond the software itself, right? And what I wanted to do today is think a bit about these 30 years, about, well, why KDE has been around for 30 years, whether we are done yet or not, and what kind of things we're doing. This year, KDE started in 1996, and this year we are starting to do like the preparations, the celebrations. We are going to conferences like this and explaining what we're doing. You will see that there will be some activities if you want to join us around October, which is like the date. And you are more than welcome to join back then when it starts. So I'm gonna start and focus on the history part. KDE, we consider it started, like when we consider the birthday is when we look at the email that Matthias Ittrich sent to this news thing called the Comp OS, blah, blah, blah. That was the thing back then. If you were on the internet at that time, you probably are thinking, yeah, I use that all the time. I personally never really used that. I was actually kind of young still, and obviously didn't have an internet myself. Not even sure if it would have been called internet even that. In any case, he sent a message called new project, colon, cool desktop environment, and in parentheses, KDE. And he was talking about how he was, he really liked using Linux. He wanted his partner to use Linux as well, but the solutions that were available at that time were not like really amenable, really something that he would confidently suggest somebody he loves to use and, well, to stay sane and happy, right? And he was working for a company called Trolltech, or not maybe working yet, but he was getting familiar with the framework anyway, which was called Qt, which was working on C++ and stuff, and it could run on Linux, could run on X11, and he thought, how about I take this technology I really like and I start making tools friendly to people and so they can use free software on their personal computers and be happy instead of using, well, Windows 95 or whatever would have been back then, right? And actually this has been maybe the leading thread on how we have been working within KDE. We have been focusing on creating solutions that are for end users. We're not creating like, we do create a lot of things. KDE right now is super big, and obviously to create a lot of things, you need to create like frameworks, you need to create modules, you need to create little things that you can reuse, and obviously we will always encourage everybody to reuse any component that is available. But in the end, our ultimate goal is to be able to reach the people who want to use computers and make it possible for them to enjoy them. After many years, actually in 2016, we were trying to think, how do we explain what KDE does right now? KDE started actually like as a cool desktop environment and with emphasis on things that made a lot of sense back then. Like it started actually as a desktop environment But today, for example, desktop is not even that relevant anymore. We're not just a desktop environment. We do have a desktop environment, which we call Plasma. But it's only part of our offering, an important one, but still one part. So we have started thinking, like, how do we explain who we are? What do we do? And we came up with a mission vision statement and a vision to explain. It reads, as it's written on the slide, a world in which everyone has control over their digital life and enjoys freedom and privacy. And I think that it's a very good way to explain why we're doing it, right? It's not about, so much putting something on the desktop or anymore. It's not about making sure that Matthias Itri's girlfriend can use her laptop, but more like making sure that the values of free software can be translated into every part of our society, right? Like, it's not really acceptable to say we have all of these concepts that are very useful to everyone, but then say, well, but you need to really be this super hackery person to, well, to enjoy them, right? Because, well, if you cannot reach a freedom, it's a freedom that you don't really have. Another way of looking at these 30 years is maybe try to, well, put KD's history in parallel to, well, the rest of the world. In the end, we've been living in an industry that has evolved a lot. We have seen since the 90s, since 96 when KD started, like a whole boom of, informatics, right? Like, obviously it was a thing back then already, but we've had in between all of the internet, all of the, mobile revolution, all of the cloud revolution, right? Like, it's a lot to take. And obviously also KD has had to adapt or has adapted in some aspects or even influence, right? Like, one of the things we often talk about is how KHTML was one of the first components that started in KHTML. So, like, Matthias started his desktop first. He did, well, what you would do, I guess, like, you need to be able to have a menu to start applications and then make sure that the windows go into the right place. But then how about I am able to connect to the internet, right? And then, somebody needed to write a way to render the websites. And back then, like, there wasn't all of the technology that I had. Not for starters, WebKit didn't exist. So he had to, he had someone in KD, like, at that time it was a good bunch of people who were collaborating already. They had to start and create an HTML engine so that they could put whatever was coming from a website into the page. This became KHTML. And when Apple realized that they also wanted to be able to render websites because the web is all cool, they started to build upon free software, and that was KHTML, right? So we can easily say that probably all of your devices in your pockets are running KD in a way or another. But yeah, let's not sit on those laurels, because in the end that's somewhat far removed. Over time, like we are saying, there was the internet. Obviously, internet has been something very central to how Linux has been worked. Maybe something that was super important for us was the mobile revolution, somewhat. The company we were talking about earlier, Trolltech, that was developing Qt. It was bought by Nokia because, well, they wanted to do something similar to what Apple was doing, and they needed to have a good framework as well. And over there, a lot of technologies that we are still using nowadays got either created or much more intensely developed. And it has shaped a big time of how we're doing things further on. Yeah. So in the end, when we talk about what we do in KD, it's in the end about this rapport with the user, right? With what is the experience that a user gets when they open their laptop and they say, like, I say laptop, let's use their device, the kind of rapport they will have with it, if they actually like can be do their work, their task, their job, their entertainment in a happy way. When preparing the presentation, I searched for some screenshots. This is one of the earliest one we can find. That would be KDE 1, and we can already see that it looks more or less like a desktop would. Obviously, it has aged. I wouldn't say it has aged that badly. Like, we can see the little starting buttons here. They already had the virtual desktops, and then the different things you also want to switch through, I guess. In KDE2, then again the same concepts, more polished clearly. The displays were better. I mean, a lot of the ugliness of it is not just that we didn't have very nice designers, right? Like, the technology was limited, and what we could do with it also was. For a while, we had Gandalf as our mascot until Lord of the Rings decided that we were some kind of orcs, and they asked us to stop using it, so we turned into the dragons, which, to be honest, is so much cooler anyway. This was KDE3. This is actually the first one I really properly used, and it was somewhat of a beast. Actually, it worked really well. It even got forked by some people who were so fond of it that they didn't really want to move on. And yeah, good for you. This is more or less around the time I was saying that Nokia got all excited in our tech stack, and also some of our developers, we wanted to like ride that wave. Plus, computers were getting more powerful, GPUs started to become a thing, and it was obviously tempting to say, how about we leverage that, right? And then we had what was originally called KDE4. I think that we can already see everything looking much more like smooth and polished and from the future. We had this whole redesign of the icons, they were starting to make them all super like detailed, like actually, they're obviously designed as SVGs, and you can like super zoom on them and see a lot of details that in the end you wouldn't see because, well, these icons would end up being like, 32 by 32 pixels or something, right? Like, you cannot do all that much magic. But it was really super cool. And as I was saying, SVG started being a technology that we could use thanks to, Qt gaining support for SVG. And we started making a lot of use of it. KDE4 was, this was the first that was called Plasma. We can start seeing the Plasma branding here on the corner and such. And also, it's when we started with this Oxygen look, which we're not really supporting anymore. It was one somewhat dramatic release as well. Those of you who were around maybe have that spine in your little chests. But I think that it did also bring a lot of nice things. But since there were these problems, we then like started to focus a lot more on making a clean and sleek experience, and also like focus a lot more on stability rather than features and making sure that everything was like super, super powerful. This is Plasma 5. This is the first version that was simply only called Plasma rather than KD something. Actually, it started somewhere in the middle of the KD4 times. We struggled with this rebranding, and actually even nowadays there's a lot of people who say, yeah, use the KDE desktop. KDE desktop is not a thing anymore. Unless we say that the KDE desktop is Plasma, sure. Not a desktop, right? Words are so low that it gets a bit complicated at times. And then Plasma 6, which I would say it looks somewhat similar to what Plasma 5 did. But there are a ton of iterations and little polishes that have made this something that you really want to do. to use and to try. But that's just the desktop, right? I did show these because I think that it's nice to see how things evolved over all these years. But we've done a lot more. Like I was saying, we have a ton of applications with a desktop. Well, you have a desktop, right? Like you can start applications, but if you don't have applications to do your thing, then you're somewhat lost or sold anyway. So we have a ton of applications that you can use. Education, personal information management, well, anything really, games. And also you have frameworks if you create applications, if you create, well, some kind of product and like are somewhat aligned with our tech stack, you can leverage them and get them to do a lot of things that otherwise you would have to do by hand. And well, maybe, well, if you don't have to do something that someone else has already done, then you can focus on doing whatever you are doing, which is probably interesting to you, right? Since I didn't want to go through all of the applications, I decided to do a weird exposé with all of our icons. I think that it's pretty cool. Also, like, it's a good props on all of our designers who do the prettiest and flashiest icons ever. And good job to them. So that's more or less what we do in KDE, right? What we do is, sorry? Yeah, we create cool icons and then an application behind, because otherwise we don't have a reason for it, right? But let's take a step back, because what I've been showing is the result of our work, but what I guess is interesting for us as creators is how do we make sure, how does that happen, right? How do we go from, it would be cool to use this nerdy operating or kernel to power, I don't know, personal computers and have people put their work on it, right? And how about we do all of that with from people from the community, from people who don't really have a big industrial interest in it, but rather want to see this thing happen and work. One of the important things for us has been historically Qt, and they do are a bigger company who happens to produce a very good open source offering that we can build all of this on top, or most of this on top. It's not like all of KDE is using Qt right now, but 99% for sure is. And it has allowed us to, well, let them focus on a lot of these boring things that maybe had we had to worry about this, we would have been able to do a lot of the other cool things and then us do the other cool things instead. And then in turn, work the other way around. Like a lot of Qt developers today are ex-KDE people or like KDE people who are doing Qt professionally, which also is something very interesting. And it's also actually something that I've discussed with many people over time, right? Like it's a very good way to join KDE and start doing your, well, first professional things there, maybe when you're at university. And in a couple of years, you're already an expert in a technology that is, well, pretty big in industry anyway. But how did we build this, right? How does it go from that weird news post in 96 to today? Well, we can easily say that it all happens communication-wise. Like, we're at the distributed community. Matthias might have been in Tübingen, but when I started 10 years later in Barcelona, right? And I didn't even see that original message. Most of our communication has been happening on mailing lists and chats. Chat obviously started as IRC. These days we're using Matrix mostly. Mailing list, actually we're using probably the same mailman as in the beginning, maybe not October of 96, but I'm pretty sure that mailman list started quite early on as well. And we obviously need different version control systems. Version control systems also, they changed over time. When it started, it was CVS, which I personally also never really used. Then we switched into Subversion. And right, actually, after Subversion, we switched into Git, which we've been on for easily 15 years now. And actually, it's been pretty good. Also, all of these systems need to have other weights on top to coordinate these contributions, especially with people who come and go, with people who might not like be experts still when they start, right? We have been using things, what was it called? Well, there was this one called Review Something. It was developed by VMware, actually. That was kind of weird. We started using it in the beginning because it used Subversion. It could support Git eventually, maybe, but not so well. So we moved into Fabricator, which actually spawned from Facebook as well, still open source project. And we were on that until we were like properly settled on Git. And we started using GitLab, and we have for quite a while now. And it's working pretty well. If any of you considers to, for example, submit a change or something, which I encourage everyone to do ever, you'll see that it's a very familiar process to other projects, be them open source or not so open source anymore, and you should feel right home. Our main tool to communicate with end users have been Bugzilla. So if you're using our software and you find that something is not working that well, you're all welcome to go to bugs.k.org and report your issue there. And we will have a little conversation about what the exact problem is and how to address it and maybe address it. And if you're a good reporter, you will try the fix you got and maybe say, yeah, it worked and I'm so happy. And then you can do a donation because that's nice. But you don't have to. You don't have to. Yeah, Bugzilla is also a very nice project, very widely used. It was developed by Mozilla, I'm pretty sure. And yeah, cool. And how do we look like? I mean, we could start discussing how every component is architected, but in the end, I think that the interesting part is that we are quite able right now to reuse a lot of components internally. We also have like other companies and organizations reusing these components. Those being more normally under frameworks. We also have like services. The difference between a service and a framework is somewhat weird, I guess, but it's like the biggest difference is how you would talk to it anyway. But the important part is that we've been reinventing ourselves. We've allowed ourselves to be reinvented in that over the years we have had the flexibility and the possibility to rewrite or rethink big parts of our stack and still prevail, right? Like we were seeing there was like this whole change between what was the desktop earlier and then Plasma, and it happened, and it allowed as well ourselves to think about other use cases, right? If we had never done the technology switch that men's Plasma, we wouldn't have been able to go into, for example, mobile phones or TVs or similar devices like that. And eventually what this means is that we have been growing with our users, we have been growing with society, how the society and effectively industry has changed, right? Like the places that have computers inside today and in 1996 are vastly different. The computers themselves are also vastly different, and we have been changing with that and still building on the trust that we had from the first day and learning from our experience, which effectively is what matters, right? Like, if you do all of these bigger changes and like decide to burn that trust, then you are just like any other new project anyway, which is a little bit what happened, like I was saying, on those worst releases at times. But we've learned and we've certainly improved a lot, and I think that is very important. And it's not trivial, right? It's not trivial to learn when effectively, like, sure, we're the one community, but people change inside. Like, probably nobody nobody from the original team is around anymore. There are some people who come and go, like they might join Academy, but they're not hands-on. The people who are doing it today, they're obviously younger. Not obviously, I guess, but like came later anyway, and they have their own perspective and their different mindsets. And well, one of the important things how one could make that happen is by actually getting people together and interact with each other. It's not all an artifact of how well the internet and the virtual communication works, but effectively also like getting together. This was the picture I found, the older picture of a KDE meeting. Those of you who have been around the KDE world, you might even recognize some of these people. All of them, like, or all of them, at least the ones I know there, they're all like really good engineers anyway. And they started like breaking this barrier. And I think that it's also somewhat interesting to understand that like back then, the internet was not what it is today. And it also was a lot more important for them to meet and get together. And it's something that we continue doing still today. Like, this is the picture from last Academy last year in Berlin. I had to cut it because I couldn't fit them in this big ass screen. We continue meeting, and like even though all of the tools we have to collaborate online, they're still there. We still to be able to get together and see how you can work. Something we also do besides our bigger conference is organizing smaller sprints. This is ones that we used to do in Vanda in Switzerland. These were really cool. The idea was getting together there and be hands-on. What we do at Academy is more like a little bit like here. We will do some presentations. We'll have like smaller one-hour meetings kind of things. Over there, we will like sit down side by side with your teammates and go at it in a somewhat different way. And one of the cool things about this one is that Mario, which is one of the people here, he would come with Swiss chocolate and help us, which is pretty cool. That's from another sprint we weren't. And yeah, we've been doing all of that in a weird industry. I think that we all have to agree that it's not clear cut that how, like, where all IT has gone over the years. The industry has learned from all sorts of crafts, some better than others. And we are trying to stay away from all of that. And still, like, it is a daunting task, right? Operating systems are hard. We are a core part of the operating system when we are in it. And there is a lot to figure out. There's a lot to get right. And obviously, ourselves being very much present in how the user is interacting with their own work tools, makes it somewhat more daunting. And plus, we are competing with like humongous beasts, right? Like, we're not only talking about like big companies, but we're talking about like the top 10 companies in the world. Five of them are probably our competition, right? Which is, well, somewhat weird, but yet here we stand, right? Like, we continue doing our software, we continue making software that you can put in your computers, you can buy computers with our software, and we try to still give you what you probably need to be able to do your task, right? And we're not only doing, like I was saying, these Plasma things, like we have the applications. One of the ones that people really like, and actually not even just in Linux, like it's very widely used elsewhere, is Krita. Krita is a drawing tool specifically. I don't know if there's any drawers or like painters, but if this is something you do, that it's kind of cool. We have these mobile applications as well, some of them even for Android. I took this picture earlier because, yeah, taking a screenshot is kind of sad at times, I guess. And yeah, this app, it's called Itinerary, and it works together with a bunch of different tools, including OpenStreetMaps and stuff. It drove me here, so it is a little bit useful, at least, right? So if you don't really know, like, what you do with Itinerary is like you will upload your train tickets, your plane tickets. It will show the QR stuff. It's really cool. It has very also crazy features, like it can tell you how to go from one platform into another in the train stations when you have to change and stuff. It's really wild. We have had partnerships with laptops to make collaborative decisions on what a laptop should be like and make sure that the people who get them works. There are other also partners and patrons of KDE right now even that are also shipping our software with their laptops. And actually it's something I always encourage. It doesn't even need to be ours, right? But like, make sure you buy your laptops with Linux. Don't do this whole thing of like, yeah, I'll get it with Windows and then remove it. That's kind of defeating the point and like not remembering the people how important it is that we own what we have. Another very interesting device we've collaborated with has been the Steam Deck, which is a gaming console by one of the biggest gaming companies. It has been somewhat of a wild ride, this one, but it has been like very satisfying to see people using our software to like do things that like they don't care about free software, more of these users, and like they're still loving our product, which is awesome, I would say. We have Plasma Mobile as well. Like, much like we would want to be able to use Linux on our laptops, also on the phones, it makes a lot of sense to be able to own your data, own your experience. And yeah, we have a solution for it. It still does need some work, and it is still getting some work. So I find it super exciting. And something that also we've been talking a lot about has been older hardware, right? All of this big fat industry doesn't really care about hardware that is old. But if you think about, like, we are, I guess let's agree, in a climate crisis. And one of the bigger, more impactful things is like having to produce more and more hardware all the time, and sometimes it's not really necessary. So if we can provide solutions for these devices, this is something also really useful, and we're very happy to be part of that solution as well. And yeah, finances, this is something I really didn't want to talk about, but I thought it's always useful to understand, to get a little bit the picture, right? In the beginning, when the KDV started, a little bit the plan was like, yeah, we're going to talk to all of the different companies who definitely need to run software, and they're going to be funding what we're doing, and like we will be able to do more and more things. But that didn't really happen as much as we would have liked. Plus, like the different crises, like economic crises that we've gone through, have definitely affected us in different ways. And actually, what we have found that has been much more useful is to like rely on our users, on all of you, right? And having people like donate and say, yeah, I use this, I have my mother using this, and it's great. We are happy, and we think that a donation is worth it. And actually, this has become a big foundation of our way of funding the organization and making sure that we keep delivering good products and good things. And yeah, like I want to thank everyone who has helped. I don't know, I'm sure that some of you around here have already, and it's Awesome, thank you. But does that mean that we're done? That like we have created a ton of products that people are loving, people are, well, donating and being thankful for? We could easily say yes, but this is not us. We are, we are people who like to create and who like to, well, keep improving. So are we done? We're not done, right? Like, the fact that we're turning 30 only means that we have been around since more or less all of these devices have been around, but, well, we still, well, we have a lot of experience, we have a lot of technology and tools to keep doing things, and we want to keep working. How people use their devices keeps changing, and we cannot like really ignore that. The hardware that you buy, that we get, also keeps changing, and actually we want to encourage that, right? Like, it's good that the industry keeps providing us like different and new opportunities for how computers can be used, and we also get excited about that. So new form factors would be like, now we have phones. Maybe like in 2-3 years we'll have weird things you talk to. I don't know. I mean, I know they exist, right? But it's something we haven't really been thinking about. We're actually mostly graphics people around, but that doesn't mean that we cannot tackle other problems. The hardware keeps changing. Here, more like what I meant was, mostly all our private computers have been Intel-backed, right? Like, or x86. Now we have a ton of things with ARM, and like also tackling it is a whole different thing. Keeps changing. We need to stay awake. We need to keep serving our users. And Linux itself is changing, right? Like, and I'm talking about Linux here specifically because I think that is important that we have this vision that goes from like the end user down to the hardware, and the only, and we do definitely need to have a kernel inside. We do work also with other operating systems and kernels, but Linux is by far the most prevalent, and it keeps changing, right? Like, systemd, for example, over the years has grown somewhere in the middle. And it has been also putting on the table a lot of technology that wasn't really around before. It's something that we need to embrace, and we need to make sure that still works. We need to give feedback to all of these lower stack components, and yeah, make sure that everything still working, and all of that based on our experience, all of the things that we know that need to stay working and such. One of the things we have been doing for that has been KD Linux. KD Linux is this project that we've been creating, and a little bit the idea is the conglomeration of all of these like different things. Like, we need to have a good user experience. We need to be able to talk to hardware manufacturers. We need to be able to talk. We need to be able to ship to older hardware, for example. All of that, like, we need to find ways to articulate it. We need to be able to talk to users, and when they have a problem, see how we get to address it. We need to be able to create new applications and get them to the different users without like weird asterisks and stuff, right? So this project is somewhat interesting. I'm gonna have a talk a little bit later about that. If you want to join, you're more than welcome. And effectively, what we need to keep doing, and we have been doing a lot already, has been collaboration and communication. We need to stay collaborating and communicating with ourselves, obviously, but also with different projects that are around us. And yeah, we keep doing that, and I think that it has worked quite well. The other presentation I was mentioning now is called KD Linux Bitstream and Hope. I don't really know why I got the hope in there. I guess because we kind of hope that this can solve a lot of all of the problems. If you want to join, more than welcome. We, like I said earlier, we have Academy. This is our bigger conference that we go to every year. This year it's going to be in Graz between 19 and 24. You're more than welcome. It's free to join. If you want to sponsor it, you can do that as well. You can get in touch. Also, if you wanted to organize a big community of free software enthusiasts next year to have Academy here or elsewhere, our call for locations is open, so consider it. I think that it's cool. And then, yeah, that's more or less what I wanted to talk about. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
So, yeah. Anyone have any questions, let me know, and I'll get you a mic.
How much is KDE on non-Linux operating systems a concern? With my NetBSD developer hat on, like I see KDE
Your what developer on?
NetBSD developer hat.
NetPC?
NetBSD, yes. It's an operating system.
Mm-hmm. Oh, NetBSD.
NetBSD, So, like I see KDE integrating ever more with systemd, and I'm worried about, you know, removing functionality for OSs, even Linux, that don't have systemd, for example.
I actually think that we have had this conversation a lot before. I don't think we have removed any big functionality for these operating systems yet. Not that anyone is planning. I think that it's also wise that these operating systems embrace interfaces that are similar to what systemd puts on the table. But I don't think that it's like something that is going to become like a problem anytime in the future. But obviously, like, big part of it all is how do we all remain alive, right? Like, how do we all keep working, keep collaborating? And if we all like stop working, well, one advantage of like stopping to work and not doing anything anymore is that what works today will work forever. One of the problems of stopping to work is that all of the things that don't work today will never work. I think that it's important that we stay awake, alive, making sure that the things keep working. And if something breaks, well, it's told. And in the case of like these also smaller operating systems, I think that it's important that like people communicate a lot, collaborate a lot, make sure that they're part of the conversation, that they can be proactive as well, like if something is break, like what is what we should be doing as well, right? What is it that, how it should work? Part of the problem and something that we've seen, an example about all of this has been, I think, the boot process. I think like boot process is something quite interesting that we've tried to get right a lot of times. So I am talking about the, you press your power button, and from your power button turning on into you being able to click on your web browser or something, like, do you have a well-integrated experience? And at that, like, we haven't been great, right? And by that, I mean, like, you get, like, all of these blinking mode set things at times. And there's ways to tune that, but you need to have all of the components working together in a like very tight. And if these components also keep changing depending on where you are, because like in Ubuntu it will be systemd, in FreeBSD it will be init 5, and maybe in NetBSD is something else because you got your own solution. I'm not super privy with the details. Well, it's also harder to do that, right? So there is always the possibility, for example, to say, how about we let things blink, right? Like, you can always say, it's easier because like you have the handoff, like of you stop a process, it blinks, you start the next process, but it blinks into the next process, and then it's fine, and then you can use your computer, it's fine. But what we are also trying to work on, and that's kind of why I'm trying to say, or why I'm speaking about this, collaboration is very important, is because we need to give first a solution that is as polished as any other industry product, right? It's not acceptable to say our pre-software products get to be worse because we want to work on more places or stuff. And also because we can, right? We are in control of all of these things. We have all the tools available to us to make sure that these things work properly. So I think that being able to work together and only differentiating each other in the ways that we intend to, I think that it's super important. Yeah. Sorry if I went a little bit off road on the question, but yeah.
Yeah, thanks for the interesting talk. You mentioned a lot of things which are changing. What's also changing in Europe is the legal environment. I assume you are aware of the Cyber Resilience Act, which is currently heavily debated and coming into force finally December next year, which requires all software basically to be CE marked in Europe to be put on the market. This also affects commercial open source software. And my question is, has the KDE project already analyzed the potential impact of the CRA on products like Plasma or KDE Linux?
It is a conversation I've had with many of you CRA experts at times, and my conclusion keeps being that we're mostly fine. One of the things, though, that I think that it's interesting is that we should be on top of what we deliver, especially with a KDE Linux mindset, for example. Like, it stops being about, do we have to explain, do we have to have the documentation, and are we based on tools that are aware of all of the things that are inside of the product, which is more or less what the whole topic is about. So going back to your question a little bit is, as far as I know, we are mostly fine. It is very unclear to me still what do we have to do, because when legal people talk, they never give you clear answers. They're always going to tell you either you need to be all super conservative and give everything just in case somebody comes and tells you this is what you should have done, or you'll do it when you're asked to, which is big shrug, right? So I think that the important part here is that we sit on top of good technologies, that when all of this happens, we're ready to deliver, but also see what's behind these laws. Like, we need to know what CVEs are on our software, right? Do we want to collect all of this information because the CRA might ask us, or because somebody will ask us in the name of CRA anyway? Or do we want to know because we are shipping software to our users and we want to make sure that they don't have CVEs? I think that probably thinking on the latter way and making sure that we have all of the technology at hand possible to address all of these needs. And then when the CRA comes and they really know what they want, which my understanding is that they don't really yet, maybe you can correct me, either now or later, then we will be just, this is our bill of materials and they're gonna love it. And we can even write it with a tiny conky on the corner because we like doing pretty things, I guess. Yeah. Do you have any other questions? Well, I don't see anyone, but I only need to hear it. Ah, go on.
It's working? Okay. Talking about changes as well, as everybody's asking, KDE is migrating to Wayland in the next release, like fully migrating. Can we expect any NVIDIA improvement for the environment?
NVIDIA equivalent?
NVIDIA improvement.
Well, for starters, like, the migration is done, right? What we're doing on the next release is removing X11 specific code. As far as I know, most of the limitations with NVIDIA lie on the NVIDIA side. Also, I know that most, or not most, many or enough KD developers are running NVIDIA hardware and they're using it. I also know that it depends largely on which version of NVIDIA hardware you have. And it's a big fat asterisk on what I was talking about when I was saying old hardware, we want to support it. I mean, we can only support hardware as long as hardware manufacturers let us. And it's one of the big cases where I have the feeling that they're not really letting us do it properly. So the only answer I think I can give you is we're doing our best to make sure that NVIDIA's hardware is supported. Some of our hardware partners, they're even shipping, right, hardware with NVIDIA. But obviously they're shipping modern NVIDIA hardware. You might have the wrong graphics card, and then it's harder. There's a very famous meme of Linus Torvalds talking to NVIDIA, right? I think that it's still prevalent, but we're still trying to do our best because I know, we know that NVIDIA is very widespread and we want to support people using it. Yeah.
Any other questions? We still have a few minutes.
Yeah, they can think about
it. In that case, please thank Aleš and